Hi, everybody. Welcome to East to West Weight Loss Surgery, where we support our community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April Williams, and I'm the West part of East to West.
And I'm Jason Smith, and I'm the East part to the East to West.
So we are super excited today on our very second episode to welcome Wendy Rawlings, who is a licensed mental health counselor. I met Wendy maybe 9 or 10 months ago, and it was on the recommendation of a different therapist that I was seeing for food addiction. And when I told that therapist, his name was David, that I was going to have weight loss surgery, he was very excited for me. And I said, okay, well, I would love to make an appointment to, you know, really start seeing you consistently again. And he just went, ooh, about that. I don't specialize in that. And I was like devastated. I was so upset. And then he said, but I do have a wonderful friend who I can recommend that you reach out to. And it was you, of course, Wendy. And so I reached out to you right away. And our first appointment, we absolutely hit it off. And I can just say that I think the only reason that my recovery has been so successful is because you have been such a constant resource in my life that allows me to be honest and open and swear a lot and get a lot of things out, and you offer all the suggestions and help that I need. So you've just been a godsend, and I'm so happy that you are on our second show with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks. So to start off, I would just like you to introduce yourself to our listeners and to our viewers. So just in case you guys are new to the podcast, which is only 2 episodes in, but we record this on Zoom. So not only can you listen to this on Apple or Spotify podcast, but you can also watch it at our YouTube channel. So if you go to East to West Weight Loss Surgery, either on Instagram or on YouTube, you're going to find the videos for all of these podcasts that we're doing. And I would absolutely recommend that today you also watch it as well, because Wendy's provided us some visuals, some graphics, some slides, and I'm also going to show you what her website looks like. So if you would like to also utilize her as a resource for you before surgery, you know, or during, you know, after your recovery, then you will know where to go for that information. So definitely take a watch as well if you are just listening. But like I said, to start us off, will you just give us a clinical introduction of yourself so our listeners and our viewers know who you are?
Sure. I am Wendy Rawlings. I've been in practice for 37 years. And I started when I was 12. I love what I do. It's really the most fun I can imagine in life. I have seen, being in practice that many years, I've seen a variety of types of people. I've seen every configuration imaginable, from individuals to children to families to, I have a subspecialty in collaborative divorce and helping families get through that situation. But I really, my biggest caseload are my bariatric patients, and I did that on purpose because they are my people. I love them, and I love working with them, and I love seeing changes. People like April, I've got a whole office full of them, and I love working with them. And April's just a rock star with that. I am always studying, always learning. There's lots of changes in the field, so it's always evolving, and I do the best I can to keep up the literature and with what we know and what we enjoy. So that's what I do. I have a private practice in Federal Way, Washington, and also one in Tacoma, Washington. I'm a licensed certified distance counselor, so I also see people online, especially. I don't know when people will be watching this, but this is the COVID time right now. So I do a lot of COVID, and they just waived the regulations for distance counseling so that I can see people all over the country, which is pretty significant. Yeah.
Yeah, that is really nice. So anybody who's listening or watching and they feel that you could also be of help to them, they could reach out to you and even
start.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Well, and I think we've all, ever since, you know, COVID, we've all come to understand just how valuable distance connections can be using the technology that we have. So
yeah.
I mean, Wendy, you and I have been meeting virtually now for I think 2 months, and it's just as fantastic, you know, virtually as it is in person. Although, I mean, I love seeing you, but, you know, desperate times call for Zoom, and that's okay.
That's right.
There's definitely ways that you can keep connected and also stay safe as well. And this has been one of the major factors in that. So it's a good thing for the healthcare community.
And right now, connection, especially in our population, is super important. So, yeah. They're exactly right, Jason.
Yes. Yesterday, I used to hold those virtual bariatric meetups every Sunday, and it was kind of getting to the point where they were becoming a little bit cumbersome, and we're moving more towards every other week, maybe once a month, and people messaged me all day yesterday, and they're like, oh my gosh, where's the link for the meetup? So, I mean, I know that it is something that people are really being drawn to. It's something that people are seeking out because, you know, you just realize how closely connected you were to people physically. And when that is taken away, you know, for good reason, you try to seek that out in other ways. So we're definitely seeing a bump in that. Right. So Wendy, in your intro, you said that, you know, bariatric people are your people. And I know that because you yourself have had weight loss surgery, which I think is something that makes you just the perfect expert for this community. And like what you said, your background is so holistic, and then able to speak specifically to things that bariatric people are experiencing or thinking or doing is so helpful. It's just another place of empathy, and it's just another place that you can feel safe expressing those ideas. So will you share with us weight loss surgery experience?
Sure, yeah. I had a gastric bypass in 2005, dropped 205 pounds, and have kept all but 10 pounds of that off. My body just wanted to add that 10 pounds. It felt good. My kids called me the crypt keeper because I looked so sallow. I am no small person, but I am not. I'm fit. I'm in shape, and I feel wonderful. I feel really healthy. Probably 15 years before that, I was diagnosed with diabetes, and I kind of pretended I didn't have it until I was hospitalized with high blood pressure and some heart issues. So I finally was forced to face that. I went to an endocrinologist, and the first thing they said to me without knowing me for more than 3 minutes was, you need weight loss surgery. And I was so offended that I never saw the guy again. And I just kind of left his office and went, well, I guess I'm on my own because there's no way I'm going to do that. So I worked for that 10 or 15 intervening years on why I was eating too much. And I saw other specialists and experts who did not believe that I wasn't dropping weight on 1,000 calories a day or less. And I finally got to the spot, and my family really helped me. By then I had grandchildren, and they said, you know, Mom, we want our children to know you. And I wanted to know them too. So I gave it some serious thought and pondered for a while. Took me a while to get there, but in fact, the night before, I was ready to cancel, and my son-in-law talked me into it. And I'm glad it was a game changer. And I've never looked back. It's been the best thing I've ever done. And that said, I had to be ready. I understand that this is huge, and there's all kinds of shame and guilt that goes along with that decision. We've been body shamed, and we also feel guilty that we didn't have the willpower to do it on our own. It's not about that. Believe me, I know we have willpower, and it really isn't about that. We get to a place where we can't. Our bodies just don't do what they naturally would do. And there's a lot of reasons, and they're still trying to figure out what all of them are, but there's a lot of reasons for that. So weight loss surgery was my way to start over. And I was really determined that because it was such a dramatic, drastic step, I was going to do it right. And I did. So it's been great. Yeah.
And I definitely, Jason and I always were nodding in agreement with you. We know that shame is the reason that a lot of people don't opt for weight loss surgery. And when Jason and I met, we really share a passion of, you know, destigmatizing weight loss surgery in our community and beyond our community, because it is a tool like any other medical tool that people should use and not feel guilty or shameful about using to live at a healthy weight. I think all of us recognize that we did some things, or we had some behaviors and habits in our life that were not the healthiest, but we also were not lazy, slovenly people that sat on the couch all day eating bonbons. We were active people. We were, you know, we're professionals. We're parents. We're grandparents. We're active people. And our bodies just would not let go of that weight. And if there is a medical tool out there to use, why are we not utilizing it?
Right. And I recognize for myself as well, like you had mentioned, you know, the stigma behind it. That's a big reason as to why I myself didn't elect to have the surgery 3 to 4 years before I actually had it, was because of that same thing. I didn't want people to think I took the easy way out. because that's what a lot of people link it to. It's like, oh, well, instead of getting yourself in the gym and really working at it, you just went and had surgery. Well, that's, you know, anybody can do that. Well, I'm here to tell you right now, anybody can't do that, because we've seen a large number of people that don't make it, they fail at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're here for those people too. Just because it didn't work for you, you know, the first time you went through it, doesn't mean that you can't get back on the wagon, you know, after you've had the procedure and get yourself back on track and get where you want to be. So, yeah, the stigma to me is one of the biggest things that we need to try to get a hold of.
Yeah. One of my favorite cartoons is a cartoon that these women are sitting around the table talking, and one of them says, weight loss surgery is the easy way out, said no weight loss surgery patient ever. And it's hard. If you've done it, it's hard. But it's also the thing to help you be healthy. And it's also why you do it. I did it for family. I did it for health. I didn't do it to wear size 4. That ship sailed when I was 6 years old, probably. But it's why you do it, and that'll help you. Yeah.
And that's really what we're here today to talk about. So the title of this episode, well, the working title at the moment is Changes, because while weight loss surgery is a tool that we have utilized, or if you're listening, you're watching, maybe you're thinking about utilizing it. From my personal experience, it's probably about 10% of the reason I've been successful so far. It got me over the initial hump. It helped me kind of really make that initial break between food and my addiction and that need. But really, once I recovered, maybe 3 or 4 months into it, the tool is secondary, because all of the work that actually goes into being successful after weight loss surgery has to do with everything that's going on between your ears. It doesn't have anything to do really with, I mean, it does, but the biggest bang for your buck, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, is the changes that you have to mentally go through to become the person who does live at a healthy weight. Because before surgery, you were not a person that could have ever lived at a healthy weight. And you really do have to become a new person to be successful. And it's not that your core, it's not that your seed or your essence or your soul changes, but everything outside of that has to change to become the person that lives at a healthy weight. So when Jason and I were, you know, we're thinking about doing this podcast, we made a list of like, well, you know, who would we want to talk to and what do we want to know? And instantly, Wendy, you popped into my brain, and I shared that with Jason, and I just said, you know, the thing that has been, I think, most helpful in my discussions with you, Wendy, is numbers. I'm a very numbers-orientated person. I'm a very black and white person. So if you tell me that I need to get to this destination or this goalpost or, you know, this is the parameter, these are the stats, I can focus on that because it's very clear, for me. So the first thing that resonated with me was when you told me the stats for relapse, right? Or, you know, what is a relapse? What is a slip? And then what are your chances of doing that? And when you told me that in the first 2 years, I would have a 50% chance of relapse, I think you could have blown me over with a feather. I mean, I was just so...
I think I remember your expression.
It was not that kind. No, I'm sure. As Wendy and Jason know, I swear like a sailor. I know it was a lot of curse words in one string. And Wendy so graciously just smiles and looks at me and goes, oh, that's true. But when you said that 50%, I just, you know, dumbfounded. So will you explain to us, you know, what is a relapse? What is a slip? And then what are those numbers?
Sure. Yeah. This is a foundational piece of our changing, because like you said, April, we're not changing who we are. We're just changing how we do life. And we're changing our relationship with food, hopefully with people, with pretty much every bit of our life, kind of upgrade ourselves. I became Wendy 2.0 and just kind of an upgrade. So these are foundational things. So most of us have an addiction, whether it's to sugar, whether it's to salt, whether it's to some kind of a food addiction. Probably it's not to broccoli or to Brussels sprouts, but we have some kind of a relationship with food. And there's a lot of ways to tell if you are. On my website, there's it's called a Yale addiction food test or something like that. You can print off and take. But most of us have some kind of addiction, or at least compulsive behavior, when it comes to eating. Sometimes it's has to do with exercise and those kinds of things as well. So when we change our eating patterns, and you have to change your eating patterns, you have to change them before you, most of us change them before surgery. We all have to change them afterwards and we'll get sick. And we do want to change them so the surgery will be successful. And so the surgery, that the attention to surgery and before and after creates a change in us, which is great. But after a while, the change in the focus starts to become regular and becomes, we go back to habit. And that's why we slip or we relapse. So a slip is what something that you do once, sometimes twice, but you get right back on the horse, you acknowledge that you did it, you do it, and then you move on. A relapse is when you don't get back on the horse, or when you don't admit to yourself that you did it, and you don't take steps to change that, because there's no failure here, it's all feedback. So if you don't implement that feedback and go, well, what went wrong? What am I going to do next time? What can I do not to prevent, you know, to prevent this from happening so that it doesn't happen again? Then we get into relapse. And after about 9 months, and with guys, it tends to be about 9 months. With women, it tends to be a little bit longer. We do go into that spot where it starts to become old habit eating. So then we start to cross lines. Oh, I didn't mean to have that. That was the first time I had that. Oh, I didn't dump. Oh, well, that's cool. Or that wasn't such a bad dump. Or that was a terrible dump. I'm never going to do that again. I had two dumps, and we called the paramedics both times. It was embarrassing. I thought I was having a heart attack, and it was enough to do it for me. That was a great experience that I would never recommend to anyone, but it did what it needed to do for me so that I didn't go into a relapse. But that's not the way you want to do it. So a relapse is where you don't get back on the horse, or you tell yourself a story that this is the last time. We all know these stories. This is the last time I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it once. Or we'd say, everybody does it. It's not fair that I can't do it. Or I've had a really hard day. I deserve this. And then there's all the unconscious reasons that we do that. So that's what a relapse is. So because of that, it takes 2 years of building new wiring in our brain to do that differently. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. And so that's at 2 years. They used to think if you were 2 years in recovery, you were in recovery. And now they're finding that you need to be there for five years. You have a 15% chance of relapse rather than a 50% chance. So if we look at it as a day at a time, we're in it for the long haul. We're running a marathon. We're not running a sprint, and I'm a sprinter. So, I mean, not real in real life, but the way I do my life is through sprints. And so I have a marathon full of sprints, and I have short goals that I do to get to the end of my marathon. And that works for me because I'm a sprinter running a marathon. So does that answer your question, April? Yeah,
I think so. So, I mean, really what I heard from you and what I just have learned from you is that really we are working to become this new healthy person for 5 years. We can't let our foot off the gas pedal for 5 years.
Yeah.
And that is a long time. I mean, it's a drop in the bucket when we're thinking about our lifespan and we're thinking about our quality of life. But I just remember when I first heard those numbers, it was a little bit devastating for me because I just thought I worked so hard battling food for 38 years before I had surgery. And then I had surgery and it was this fantastic tool. And you think this tool is what you need. And now your life is going to be so different afterwards. And I just remember when you told me those numbers, it was like, okay, wait a minute. For 2 years, I have to be diligent to not go back to my old ways. And then when you're like, well, it's actually five, I was like, oh, you have got to be kidding me. Like, what the hell did I sign up for? I was done battling this. I wanted to like tap out after surgery. And now I have to work just as hard for 5 years. So I think to put this in a little bit of context for our viewers or for our listeners, I'm kind of where I'm to the point in my recovery where I'm starting to go back to my old habits. And I shared this with Wendy. It was maybe 3 months ago. I enjoyed drinking. Before surgery, I could drink copious amounts and really not feel intoxicated, thanks to my German heritage and my alcohol family background. But after surgery, I knew that I would attempt to switch my addiction from food to something else. And Wendy had said, you know, be careful of alcohol. Okay, I will be careful of that. And I was having a really rough week, and I was in a very dark place after recovery with food and, you know, the mental things that I was going through. And I was at the grocery store, and my favorite brewery had a new beer. And I don't even like beer. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get that. It's tropical. I'm going to try that. And okay, I bought it, and I sat home and I cracked it open and I drank half of it. And okay, well, that was whatever. That felt great. Well, then the next day I did it. And then the next day after that, I did it. And my husband came home and he was like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, nothing, just, you know, looking at my phone. And I had my can of beer sitting next to me. And he's like, oh, are you drinking, you know, LaCroix or Spindrift, you know, what I normally enjoy drinking. And I was like, no, it's that new beer from Silver City Brewery. And he goes, oh, well, that's weird. You don't drink beer. And I just looked at him and I flipped him off and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I do. You know, I wanted to try this. And he's like, okay, well, whatever. You know, like no, you know, okay. No judgment, no anything. But, you know, he was just like, well, you know, you just don't do that.
Yeah.
And I was so mad. So, you know, I just told him to, you know, take a leap and whatever. But, you know, thank God he did say that, because that was a slip. Right. That was really something that was like, ooh, okay. So I noticed that, like you said, it was feedback, not failure. And I realized that I was trying to cope with some things in a way that was not healthy for me. And I threw all the cans of beer away in my house that I had. And I'm very cognizant now of how I can go down there. And I do see myself relapsing back into my old habits. I can eat a little bit more now. I can enjoy some foods that I used to enjoy, you know, after, you know, before surgery, but my weight has stalled. So, you know, I'm...
Who knew, right? That's such a great example of a possible cross addiction.
Yes, yes.
And to make it, I mean, 5 years does sound like a long time, and it's not... It's not 5 years of drudgery. It's 5 years of playing with this a little bit, having successes and having failures and pulling back and going, okay, what am I going to do instead? My one thing that I've abstained from for 15 years, I thought, because I am a sprinter, I thought, okay, if I can turn this marathon of a lifetime into a sprint, I'm going to sprint through saying no to ice cream. And that's my thing. I haven't had ice cream in 15 years. I don't intend to have it for the rest of my life. That's just my way to stay strong and keep myself grounded. And I don't recommend that for anybody else. It just works for me. So my first sprint through ice cream, it was horrible. Ice cream is, the reason I chose it was because it was my danger food. It was my gateway food. If I said yes to ice cream, I said yes to everything else. So I decided ice cream had to be the bright line that I drew for myself. And in the beginning, I noticed every bit of ice cream, I noticed every new ice cream flavor in the store. And I thought to myself, and Ben and Jerry's, oh my goodness, they're terrible. They are hard on us. So I noticed all this stuff. And then one day I thought, why am I looking at ice cream? And we do that. We look at all the things that we can't have. So quit looking at ice cream, and it made it a little easier. But my husband loves Dove bars on the stick, and he can eat whatever he wants to and be fit and thin. And so he would bring these Dove bars home, and I would have to leave. I'd hate on him for a while, and then I'd hate on the Dove bar, and then I'd hate on my genetics, and that wasn't doing anything for me either. So I would just leave the room, and he would eat his Dove bar. And we got to the point where after 2 years, it really did get easier to let go of that. But I still noticed when people were having ice cream. After 5 years, I don't know when I quit noticing, but after probably 4 years, people can eat whatever they want around me, and I don't notice anything.
And so you would consider the slip to be the same as when somebody's been working as long as they have, and they just call it a cheat day, cheat meal, cheat whatever. I'm just going to have a little bit of this because. So that to you, that's the same thing.
It depends. I want to clarify, there's something that I call a planned eating event. And that is where I'm going to go off my plan. I wouldn't usually do this. For me, it would never be ice cream, but I might have a piece of cake if I go to a birthday party or a couple of bites of it. And that's a planned eating event. That's not a slip. That's me, you know, having a moment of normalcy, I guess, or other people's normalcy. It's not my normalcy anymore, but you know, so there's a planned eating event where, and you don't do it very often because it can cause a relapse, but there are days when you go, yeah, I made a bad choice right then. And then I'm back on the wagon. I'm not gonna do that again. I figured out what happened, what led up to it. I figured out what I do next time. And that's a slip.
So you think the structure of the planned eating event lends itself to get you back on track a little better because you're holding yourself, basically you're holding yourself pre-accountable to know that you're going to have to work a little bit harder before and possibly a little bit harder after to get you, to keep yourself in line, but you've allowed yourself this little modicum of just kind of space to do what you want to do.
Yeah, and I don't even see that as a slip. I just see that as when I track my food most of the time. When I track in weekly increments.
Okay.
If I do want to have lunch with friends on one day, I can compensate for it on a different day, and move my and all of that is planned. It's a way to kind of normalize life.
True.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
And I know I know some people who have had the surgery and have not been successful. And I think the reason they haven't been successful is because soon after surgery, as soon as they kind of started experimenting with the foods that they ate before, and they either didn't get sick or they fought through the pain, you know, whatever the case was, they just continued life as before. And for me, that's kind of like what relapse is. Like, I mean, I love sandwiches. I love bread. If I went back to eating those things consistently like I did before, I have relapsed into my old behavior. Then I'm just right back on that well-defined superhighway of addiction in my brain. Because the whole goal really after surgery, when we're talking about changing ourselves, is we need to make those new healthy changes as easy to do and as thoughtless as our old habits were, right? So like me making a sandwich, me doing things that I used to do before, I didn't even have to think about it. It was unconscious. It was just, nope, this is just what I... So the whole goal is we're working for 5 years to replace that highway of addiction with a new highway of these super healthy habits, right, that help live our lives at a healthy rate. And we need to do this consistently so that it's unconscious, right? So we're no longer unconsciously getting on the highway of horrible health. We're getting on the highway.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And think how many years you were on that highway. And then we're off of it for a few months with the aid of surgery that makes us sick if we do it wrong, or, you know, we've really focused on that, or we're all in for a while. But there's no way that 9 months or that year compensates for all those years previous. And so we're really trying to build a new destination in our brains. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but that's really what we're up to. And so it's not to be feel guilty about or feel ashamed about. It's science. It's just brain science.
You know? Right. Well, and April, you had also mentioned, some things about, you know, getting sick if you do it wrong. Mm-hmm. There's people out there like myself who don't get sick for any. Like, I've yet to find anything that makes me sick when I eat it, and that's bad. Like, the only thing that I've had so far is plain Greek yogurt that is, for whatever reason, it turns my stomach and I can't eat it. So yogurt's out for me, but literally everything else I've been able to eat with no issue. Even including up to, I'm a month, not even a month and a half out yet, and I was able the other night, without even really paying attention, I ate like a 5-ounce sirloin and just smashed the whole thing, ate the whole thing, no issue, no nothing. And before I looked up, I was like, oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to eat that whole thing.
I just did. Yeah.
Now, granted, I lost 2 pounds that night, so that's awesome, but however, I don't need to just sit around and smash 6-ounce steaks all day because that's just not it.
Well, and you're in the place in your surgery where you're going to lose no matter what you eat and how much you eat. And so, but, and this is the, I can't emphasize this enough, this, when it's easy, it's the time to start building the habits. Because when it's hard and the scales aren't moving, we shouldn't be paying attention to that much anyway, but when it gets hard and the scales aren't moving, then we get discouraged. And then we throw up our hands and go, oh, you know, and then we tell ourselves a story about why we should be eating that thing that we want to eat. So it's really important. And we, a lot of us as a group, we tend to be caregivers for other people and not pay a whole lot of attention to what we need. And during the surgical process and preparation and recovery, we do pay a lot of attention to ourselves. And we shouldn't be overindulgent by any means, but it is important to pay attention to what we're doing and put some thought into what our day is going to look like and what we're going to eat. When I track, I pre-track so that every day, I do it the night before because I'm a mess in the mornings. I can't think straight. So I do it the night before. I pre-track, put it all into my tracker, and I know what I'm going to eat. So I don't have to make decisions. And that's one way that we can get a leg up on our habits is to do that a different time than when we're hungry. So, so that becomes important too.
So how do we, so if we've gotten to the place where we acknowledge that, we have some bad habits and we are finding ourselves getting back on the old habit bandwagon and we're starting to worry about that. How do we make the changes in our life that will help us live at a healthy weight?
Okay. I don't know. No. Yeah, we're all in trouble. I have no idea. We just identified the problem. I don't know there's a solution. I fortunately I have some ideas. I think it's important to understand for the purpose of this meeting today, understand two things. One is the process of how change is done. And this is across the board. It doesn't matter whether we're changing, how we relate to our spouse or how we relate to food. But there's a specific process that we as humans go through when we change. And do you want to flash that slide up? April, there's a slide that I really like that, and since I'm a visual learner, it's always nice to have pictures. You can see the steps to it. We start with pre-contemplation where we really don't know it's a problem or we don't want to know it's a problem. I was in that when I went and saw the endocrinologist and I didn't like what he said. And so I just pre-contemplated for the next 10 years and didn't really help me. So I was unaware of the gravity of the problem. And then we move to contemplation, and that's where we become aware that we have something that we want to change. We may not be ready to change it yet, but at least it's on our radar. And so the next step is preparation. So we know we have a problem, we do want to do something about it, and we're getting ready to do something about it. We're doing research, we're talking to other people, we're listening to podcasts, we're doing all kinds of things to sort of build up some support, a network of information, et cetera, that gets us ready to change. And then we take action. And that's when we take the plan that we've made in our prep stage and put it into practice. A lot of times, ideally, when we have the surgery, that's the plan. But a lot of us haven't done enough preparation because we didn't know we needed to. We didn't know exactly what we were preparing for until after surgery, we encounter some of those walls and some of those challenges. And then we have to go back and go, oh my gosh, I am still on pre-contemplation. I did not know how addicted I was to ice cream. Or I didn't know that I couldn't take a beer and just drink it because, oh my goodness. So then we're kind of playing catch up. But once we've got action down and once we've really got that that nailed and we've got some things in place, then we can move to maintenance. And maintenance is just sustaining the change. And maintenance requires a different set of skills than, because everything else is talking about change. Maintenance is talking about maintaining the change, making it constant. And that's where we get to that 5 years. So that's the stages of change that we go through. I have at my website, and I'll let you talk about that, April, but I've got it in handout form on my website. And in the handout, it has questions to ask yourself at each stage. So if you're in contemplation, it has questions to ask yourself to move you to preparation, et cetera, et cetera. It's also important to understand that you could be in three stages the same day. I remember journaling one day. I was in action. My plan was going well. And then all of a sudden, something happened that I totally didn't expect. And I went all the way back to contemplation. And I thought, who knew you could go to contemplation? I remember journaling that. Who knew you could go from action to contemplation? And I had to go back and rethink some things and redo some things in my preparation so that I could then go back to action and have it be specific. But again, there's no such thing as failure. It's just feedback. If we take the feedback, figure out what went wrong, what we're going to do to fix that, then we're in good shape. Life is one big thing, feedback loop. So,
well, and I think too, you know, when you shared this with me too, it, again, I'm a very right concrete type of learner. So I can easily identify, when I have been in these stages. And mm-hmm. What was really powerful for me was two things. One, what you just said is that you can go through all of these stages in 5 minutes, right? Yeah. Or, you know, all day. This is not like stair step and you never go back down, right? It's you can be all over the place. And then the other really powerful thing is that the skills and the knowledge and the things that I did before maintenance do not apply to maintenance. So it's almost like once you cross that maintenance threshold, you really do have to do things differently. You have to think differently, act differently. You need to operate at a different level to maintain it, because all the things that I did prior to surgery are not going to help me maintain a healthy weight, right? Like I knew how to live as a fat person before surgery. I have no idea how to live as a healthy weight person now, which is the work that I'm doing, because I don't want to go back to being that unhealthy fat person. So to know that, okay, once I get to that maintenance stage, my old playbook has to be thrown out and I have to create a new playbook for myself. And it's going to take trial and error. It's going to take that feedback loop. And it's going to take me really repeating that mantra, which I've now made into like a graphic so I can just post it everywhere in my life. Yeah. It's feedback, not failure. And if I am going to be successful, I have to utilize that feedback every second, every day, every week, every month to constantly refine what I'm doing. Because I could think that one way is going to work and then I tried and I don't, right? So when it came to tracking, I tried every app that was out there and I didn't stick consistently with any of them. And I had to continue to try things to find what works. And a month ago, I realized I was paying for Weight Watchers for years and never knew it. That's just how ridiculous I am sometimes. And I just thought, well, maybe that's a sign from the universe. And since I've been on Weight Watchers, I've tracked probably 80% of my days and I've been doing it for a month consistently and I'm starting to lose weight again. So just because you try one thing and it doesn't work does not mean that there is not something out there that will work. There is something out there. And if you don't find it, it's your job to create it. It's mm-hmm. your job to figure out how you can make something yourself so that you can live in your maintenance world. I mean,
right. Well, I feel like also there's a lot of people that think very, very one-sided about this whole situation. Like, well, I've had surgery, so Weight Watchers is something different. That's for people that haven't had it. Or I can't do calorie counting, or I can't do Atkins, or I can't do keto. I can't do, you know, because I've done this, so I've got to follow the bariatric side of things. When in reality, you could take one of those things. You can take all of those things in different little segments that will work for you and create just whatever works for you. Just know that there's something out there for you. Don't just take a stall or something. Or if you've been at a stall, because I've talked to people that have been at a stall for a year. They haven't lost a pound. The scale hadn't moved up or down. And, you know, they just like, well, I guess I'm done. Well, no, you're not done. There's still things you can do to keep going as long as you're, you know, if you're still not at the goal you want to be at, if you still think you have room to move, you know, you've got to do something to make that move happen. You can't just sit back and go, well, I've come as far as I can go. I guess maybe I have to get another surgery to get to maybe the duodenal switch, or I've got to go ahead and switch to the full, you know, bypass because this, you know, that didn't work as well. And that's just not always the case.
It's a really important thing to understand. And if you understand it from the beginning, that and you, your body is going to change, and not every body is the same. And very often we compare our progress to other people's progress, and we're not them, they're not us. We can only compare ourselves to ourselves. And I found what worked for me in the first 2 years does not work for me now. That I've been through three different apps before I finally found one that I use consistently, because I do need to track. And I liked all three of them, but pairing it with my exercise tracker was just too much trouble. So I just finally did that, and it works great, because I have to track. If I don't track exercise, I'm dead in the water. So it's what works for you. And I was way different 2 years out. What I was working for me 2 years out is way different than now. I never tracked calories. I didn't track calories. I don't know, probably till I got to year four. I should have tracked them ahead of that, but I didn't know. And every one of us burns calories at a different rate. I have a calorimeter in my office that my clients will blow into, and we find out how many calories they burn in a day. And then we can do a math problem. We have an algorithm that lets us know what your the ratio between your weight and your calories, and that doesn't ever change. Weight loss surgery doesn't change that. And that number becomes super important for the rest of your life. And then tracking calories makes sense. Also tracking your macros, your carbs, your proteins, and your fats makes a lot of sense. And that's advanced. That's after you're out for 18 months or to 2 years from surgery. But if you don't do that, you're not going to be as successful.
I follow the minimalists. They're two of my favorite people in the internet on the planet, Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. And while I'm not a minimalist, as you can see, my I very much agree, and I find that their advice helps me become happier with what I have. Right. So I'm on a separate journey besides the weight loss thing. But the thing that they said that I absolutely love the most is, You need to look around at other people's recipes, right? Just like if you sit down and you say, I want to make a chili, you're probably going to look at 3, 4, 5 different recipes and see what one kind of calls to you. But the most amazing thing that we can do in our lives is look at all of these different recipes and pick pieces out from the places that we're drawn to, or the things that we know will work for us, and create our own recipe. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with listening and learning and seeing how other people are doing it successfully and taking pieces and elements from their recipe and making your own. I think a lot of times we get stuck in, well, I have to follow this exact program, or I have to use this complete beauty, you know, regimen. And that just simply isn't the case. You really need to become very attuned to what you need, not what you want. And build your recipe, you know, based on those things. And you have to be okay with playing. You have to be okay with experimenting and trying, and then recognizing when something is not working and making those changes. But I think therein lies the difficulty, because for most of our lives, we chose the path of least resistance. This work is exhausting. This work, going through these steps, going through the mental gymnastics that is required for success after bariatric surgery, is our Mount Everest in our lives. And there are some days where we just don't want to do it. And maybe we can't do it. We just don't have the mental capacity to do it. But if we can at least, I think, get to a place in our lives where if we don't have the energy that moment or that day, we at least have the skills and we at least have the habits built to maintain.
Right.
Because sometimes we just need a break. Sometimes I just need to not worry about this for this moment or this day. But if I have the foundation, that healthy foundation, those skills, those habits, those coping mechanisms that do not propel me backwards, but just simply hold me steady, then I'm at a healthier place than I have ever been. And some days that just has to be good enough.
Yeah, it is. And that's one of the reasons I like doing tracking on a week, you know, instead of a day to day, and not to give myself a chance to not hold my feet to the fire, because we all have up and down days. And so it's again, speed back.
So what can people do? So knowing that these are the steps to behavioral change.
So what you want to do is you want to pre-plan. You want to take actually let's go to the brain function first. Let's put on the brain slide and then we'll do both of them together. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
So this is a great, again, because I'm a visual learner, I like to see things. So if we look at the way we wire from a stimulus to a destination. And the more times we go down that pathway, the stronger it gets. The fewer times we go down a pathway, the weaker it gets. So the very first time we try anything, it's kind of like a cow path. Think of building a highway. So, you know, first it started out as a cow path, and then enough cows go down it, and then people go down it, and wagons and horses go down it. And pretty soon we have a dirt road. And then somebody paves that road and makes it into a one-lane highway, and then it's expanded to two. And then some of those get turned, if they're used a lot, get turned into superhighways. And that's exactly how our brains wire our neurological pathways. The more we use them, the more myelinized or paved they become. And the reason is because our brains are wired to be efficient. So they want something to go from stimulus to response in the shortest amount of time. And they want, because our brains use 20% of our body's energy. And that's why if you've been thinking all day, you're tired, because they're gas hogs. And then our prefrontal cortex, our thinking brain, uses about 80% of our entire brain's energy. So the brain naturally wants to wire so that things don't take a lot of energy to use. And when we're doing a new habit, it takes a lot of energy. That prefrontal cortex, that thinking brain, is thinking all the time. That takes a lot of energy. So in the beginning, it takes a ton. Yeah, April, you had a question? April's brain is doing the pathway.
I mean, this is like years of learning now that all of a sudden just like snapped together in one place. Because so in my work with David, he finally explained addiction to me in a way that made sense to me. He said, right, when you enter a place of survival, right? For some reason, something has triggered something in you and you think you are not going to survive something. So your brain and your body is doing whatever it's going to do to survive. And for me, that was eat. So that weak pathway became a very strong pathway, because as soon as I got to that place where I was like, oh, this is not good, I'm feeling threatened or I'm feeling stressed, my way out of that discomfort was food. So my brain literally, like he explained it, he said, you have a super highway, you have an 8-lane super highway that has been created in your brain that you jump on the instant something gets bad or stressful. That is your addiction superhighway. And he said, you know, it's the path of least resistance. So you're going to go there unconsciously. This is just what you're going to do. And to fight your way off of that, or to not get on that highway, is so very difficult. And that's what makes addiction so powerful. And what was devastating for me in my work with David, this is like a theme, I'm devastated. And then there's like hope, you know, at the end of these sessions. But, you know, he just said, once that superhighway is made, it's never going away. And I was like, okay, well, hold on now. Like, if I can bring in some excavators and some bulldozers, and I can, you know, I can make it go away. And he said, unfortunately, you were not equipped with that, with those tools. And he said, no matter how overgrown or unused that highway gets, if you get back on it, you are going to be able to weave your way through the derelict cars and the branches and the vines and the trees that have grown up in the superhighway. You will make your way there. And I just thought, oh my God, this is why battling addiction is so exhausting. But now what you just said, so now I can clearly see my super food highway there in my brain now. But if 80% of my brain is dedicated to thinking, you're telling me that I only have a 20% capacity to actually fight this.
It's kind of the opposite. So at 80%, you're thinking about it, and that's using a lot of energy. Going down your new path, then it starts to move into that 20%. The strong pathway lives in our 20%. Our weak pathway lives in our in our 80%. And so we want to make that weak pathway our strong pathway. It becomes habit, the easier it will be and the less energy it will take. We'll start to myelinize to that new spot. Okay.
Yep. Because so, that is the goal, right?
That's the goal. Yeah. Yeah.
And what I'm always telling people always ask me like, well, what's the biggest change after weight loss surgery? And I always tell them, I'm just amazed at how much mental space or capacity I seem to have now. And I swear it's because food is such a small part of it's taking up so little space in my brain now. I have all of this extra, like, that's all I can explain it. I have this extra space or I have this extra capacity that I feel that I can dedicate in the areas that I want to dedicate it to. So it feels like making new habits or making smarter decisions, saying no more often than I say yes, is easier now. Yeah. So is that kind of related to what this is?
Yeah, the more times you go down that path, the bigger it gets. We start violinizing it, we pave it, and it gets easier and easier and easier. But remember, you've been down one path for a lot more years. So that's going to take a while to break up. But the more you go down the other path, the easier it gets. So we wanted to talk about how to do that and, you know, strategies for making that happen. Is this a good time to do that?
Yeah, definitely.
So the handout that is on my website has this on there. So if you're listening to it and not watching it, you can go to my website and find it. And we'll give you directions in a minute how to do that. So the first thing you want to do is you want to set a new destination. That's the one. So,
and I'll pop back here and show people too how to access this information on your website as well.
Perfect. Okay. So the first thing you want to do is you want to set a new destination. So we went that. Do you remember the two dots on the brain, the stimulus and response? You want to change the destination, and you want to write it down because a thought not written, a goal not written, is just a wish. And you want to turn it into a goal. So write it down. It makes it real. If you're visual and you like to do it, put it all over the house and in your car, sticky notes everywhere, just so that you remember. Because the old way, the old pattern, the myelinated superhighway is to the old destination. So you just want to keep reminding yourself so you don't forget what your new destination is. And then you want to look at what triggered you. What were the points that you got triggered at? What were the stress behaviors? Was it people? Was it events? Was it lack of sleep? Was it, you know, going past the bakery and smelling the bread? What was it that got you triggered that you wanted to that you want to start doing differently? And then, as much as you can, create a plan for what you're going to do. And I also like to write this down, but I also like to play out scenarios in my mind because we have a lot of unknowns in our life. It doesn't matter how many scenarios we play out, we're going to still have some unknowns. But the more we can kind of nail ahead of time. So I'll say to my clients, okay, think about how you're going to do this. And let's just work it out in your mind and see what the obstacles are in the moment so we don't go stupid on ourselves, because we are famous for going stupid on ourselves. We're famous to jump back on that old highway and off we go to that old destination. So you want to look at what might go wrong. And then you want to look for alternative behaviors. And this is where we tend to cross addict. So my alternative behavior to food will be alcohol or gambling or shopping or, you know, something else. So we want to look at alternative behaviors that are healthy. And this, I find that this is great work to do with other people too. You know, what are your hobbies? What are things that you do when you feel stressed or happy? Or what does your family do when you get together that doesn't involve eating? You know, get ideas from a lot of people, like the minimalists we're talking about. And so then you want to, again, write them down. Remember the reasons that you wanted to be healthy. I had a client, I always have my clients write down their vision. And then I ask them why that's their vision. Why is that important? And then we really explore what their real vision is, because some of them, it's not their real vision. And so, but usually it has to do with survival or health. And once they write that down, once her vision was, I want the ta-da life. And it was not the first thing she wrote down, or the second or the third. But to her, that meant something. And it was motivational. And she's done super well since she nailed that vision. So remembering why you're doing this in the first place. And then do an emergency plan for that step two above, you know, when you start going off the tracks, when you get triggered, make sure you have an emergency plan. It might mean calling somebody. I always say, put it on a card, write it down, put the card everywhere you can see it, and make sure there's at least five things on it. If your emergency plan is to call your mother and she's not available, well, guess what? You did your emergency plan and you can go eat the ice cream because you did what you were supposed to do, right? So make sure there's at least five things on it. 10 would be better, but then just work down your plan. Making sure, I call it my first aid kit. I keep a first aid kit in my drawer that has emergency food in it that I'm only going to eat if I get triggered or if I get hungry, if I had to stay late and I know that, I mean, I used to wend my way home through takeout, and that's not a good thing to do. So if I have my, I have an emergency kit in my car too, I'm never going to stop at fast food because I'm not hungry. I will do my emergency. And then make the decision based on your highest goals. So you see that a lot of this is pre-planning because you, ahead of time, you know what you're up to. You've got it written down. You're actually engineering your own road. You've taken that cow path and taken charge of it, straightened it out a little bit, engineered it better. And if you do that, you're back in control of yourself, of your, you know, of what you want to do. And so it's creating a plan and then it's constantly evaluating it. Did this work? If it didn't work, what went wrong? What am I going to do about that? And so you're constantly thinking, you go through life in a mindful way instead of an automatic way.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. And I think too, what, you know, when I always say like, oh, this is the hardest work I've ever done. It's because engaging with this type of activity and engaging with these thoughts and then actually doing your emergency plan, that's a lot of work.
It is a ton of work. And you feel so good when you're done. You know, that self-loathing that we lived with for how many years, it completely replaces it. And in the moment when we're having to hunker down and do the right thing, it's hard work. But when you're done and you look back, you go, oh man, I'm really glad I did that today.
Yes.
Or it gets easier and easier as that road gets paved.
That was going to be my next comment, right? Because the more that you do this, right, mm-hmm. the stronger that pathway becomes. And then pretty soon, your brain is going to automate those healthy changes. So it's going to move that to the automated side of things so that you do have more of your 80% to focus on whatever it is you want to focus
on. Focus on what you're going to cook for dinner. And so the more you can automate, the more you can have planned. I have clients that have elevated this to a science so that they really don't think about, they have created a week's worth of menus. So they just, you know, just alternate a menu every week. I don't know that I could be that automated in that category, but whatever you can automate and whatever bugs you about not automating, because I have clients say to me, I am so tired of thinking about food. I wanted this surgery so I wouldn't think about food. And now all I do is think about food. And it's because they haven't automated it yet to the point where it's automatic. And that's all it is. It's a stepping stone to get there. So you don't want to give up on that.
Well, and a lot of people, I know that, at least for myself, before surgery, I ate according to when, just whatever I felt like that day, whatever popped in my head, that's what I was going for, that's what I wanted, that's what I obsessed about until I got it. And a lot of people don't realize how important meal prepping is. They see meal prepping as something that people do on Herbalife or some people do on different programs they're on. Or super healthy people meal prep. I'm not there yet. So until I get super healthy, I don't meal prep. I can't do it that way. But they don't realize that meal prepping takes 99% of the thought process completely out of it. Like, we pick Saturdays to discuss what the menu for next week's going to be. And then Saturday we go pick up all the groceries. Sunday we spend meal prepping. The rest of the week is cruise control because you don't think about it. You just grab a container, you put it in the microwave, you're done, you go, and you're done.
Yeah, you've made all the decisions ahead of time, and that's really what this is about. But, Jason, you bring up something important that we don't have time to talk about it on this one, but, you know, maybe a different one. We are actually changing our identity. when we say, I am not that person, well, okay, but you could be if that would, so there's a lot of identity that changes. The way we think about ourselves really changes. And for us to be successful, we have to let it change.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I've noticed that a little bit just in the short amount of time since my surgery, but also in talking to a lot of the people that April and I encounter, you realize what a big role that identity plays. People are either so used to being the person that they've been for so many years that once they start transforming into this new person, it's almost lost on them. Like, that's part of where body dysmorphia and all that comes into. Like, when you see yourself, you still see yourself as the former big person because that's your safe space. It's easier for you to see yourself that way versus trying to develop a new personality for this new person that you've become and not realizing that, just like everything else, it's bits and pieces. You take bits and pieces of your personality of who you were before, and you can incorporate that into this new person as long as you take the right pieces of your old personality. As far as, you know, if you were an outgoing big person, you need to be an outgoing thin person. If you like to do certain things that didn't involve food as a big person, you can do more of those things as a smaller person.
That's right.
It's just knowing what to bring with you and what to leave behind are the biggest parts of this transformation that you're going through.
It's a big upgrade. It's, you know, again, I went to Wendy 2.0. Maybe I'm at 3.0 now. I don't know. I'm working on it. But it's also that identity, that's another pathway you're building in your brain. I mean, we talk about one pathway, but we're building many at the same time. And the identity pathway is one there. And I don't want to get off on that tangent, but that's happening. Yeah.
And I think, you know, all the new research and a lot of the publications that have come out recently about habits and how to change them really do, like James Clear. I know, Wendy, you and I talk about James Clear book often. He wrote a book called Atomic Habits. And really the whole first part of the book is identity. It's talking about how, you know, your habits are a reflection of your identity. And if you really want to make lasting change, you kind of need to start there. You need to think, you need to become very clear in terms of your identity, and then what actions or what habits would you do if you were that person. So it's very much kind of a backwards planning, right? You kind of have to start at the end and say, okay, well, you know, who do I want to be? Or, you know, what is my identity? And then what is it going to take for me to actually live that identity? And I think the most powerful piece that I continue to take away from Atomic Habits is that, you know, our actions are a vote that shows the world and ourselves who we are. And I don't have to cast a vote every time to be that identity. It just has to be a majority. So if I say that I'm a healthy person, if I identify as a healthy person, well, what does that mean? Well, if I'm not doing those things that proves to the world and to me that I am living that identity, that's not my identity.
Right. So
the more often that I do something, the more often that I cast a vote for being a healthy person, the closer I am to just being a healthy person, you know, for that to be my identity.
Sounds like identity might be a great podcast for you guys to think about doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in addition to James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, I also recommend Kelly McGonigal's book, because it does talk about what we've been talking about today, and so does James Clear's book. Hers is The Willpower Instinct, and April knows I hate that title.
Me too.
Willpower in it, but so it took me a long time to actually read the book. It is a fabulous book. So call it something else in your mind. But she talks about willpower, want power. And it is really a great paradigm for what we've been talking about today.
Yep. And I would, of course, also, Wendy, recommend your website. So Wendy has so graciously made the resources that we have referenced today available on her website. So if you just Google Wendy Rawlings, or you go to wendyrawlings.com, and then you come to the Bariatric Success Group link, if you click there and scroll down to the bottom, you're going to see a section called A Healthier You. And this is where she is putting all of the resources that, well, she created these resources just for our podcast, which I thank you very much for doing. And I know that she gives talks and speeches often, all the time, classes. And I think that this is going to be kind of, it's going to become your repository, so to speak, for resources. So great resources here that you can print out. They look like one pagers that you can, you know, do at home with yourself. And then of course you did hear Wendy say that the restrictions for, you know, helping people outside of your state have been lifted. So if you are interested in talking with Wendy more and, you know, even perhaps becoming a patient of hers, her website is how you can get in contact with her. So just a wonderful, fantastic a landing place to kind of start your journey if you're thinking about seeking out professional help, or if you just want to explore in-depth things that were talked about today. And on her website too, I've actually been through the testing that Wendy talked about, and it was fascinating. I remember when she and I went through it, my caloric number came back actually really pretty high, which was consistent with all of my other medical tests that I had done. But if I had never been through that test, I would have absolutely never known. And again, being a numbers person, a very powerful tool that I can utilize now for the rest of my life to help me maintain my healthy weight. It's just another tool that I am going to add to my toolbox of my healthy identity that I can continue to use. So highly recommend that you check out all of the resources that Wendy has made available to you. And of course, I swear by Atomic Habits. The book is actually upstairs next to my nightstand because I think I reference it like every day. And the Willpower Instinct is my very next read. I'm like 30 pages away from finishing this right now, and then that's gonna be my next read. So as we wrap up here, I mean, Wendy, I cannot thank you enough for your time, for your insight, for your honesty and your candor in these discussions. Is there anything that you feel that you've missed that you want to make sure that our listeners or our viewers know? Anything you want to leave them with?
I've just been super excited to do this and to work with Jason and April. Both of you are amazing people. I'm so glad you've got this organized. No, just don't worry about the things that we worry about. Start spending enough time to focus on yourself, to become healthy. It's a new habit, again, a new pathway in your brain, focusing on yourself, not in a selfish way, but putting on your own mask first on the airplane before you put on other people's, and have confidence and faith in yourself. That's it.
Awesome. Jason, anything you'd like to add to wrap up this episode?
I just, like you, want to thank Wendy for being here. I think a lot of insight was passed on today. I'm really hoping that our viewers and listeners got a lot out of today, because I feel like this was probably the most informative thing we've done so far. And I look forward to many more conversations with Wendy and April with you as well. And I just appreciate everybody for listening and sharing and liking. And please spread the word, because we're here to help our community. And if you're part of that community, we welcome you with open arms.
Yep, we are here to serve the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. Jason and I are not experts in anything except our own experience, but we're so thankful that we have experts in our lives like Wendy, who are here to help us through our journey and
department. Thank you for being here. A lot, yeah.
Oh, it's just been fantastic. So, well, Wendy, I think, as you can tell, this was a very, very informative, very insightful, very helpful. We would love to continue our conversation with you in the future.
Oh, anytime, yeah.
I think we could probably record 100 episodes and we still wouldn't run out of things to.
Probably not.
Yeah, no, to dive in and talk about you with. But we very much appreciate you. And to you listeners, to you viewers, thank you so much for tuning in and supporting it. And like Jason said, you can help us grow our community by liking and sharing this content with people in your world. And if there are topics or issues or things that you would like us to explore more in depth, please let us know. Reach out to us, either comment, and Blow. Send us direct messages. We are at East to West Weight Loss Surgery on Instagram. Jason and I also have independent pages that you can reach out to. So we definitely want to hear from you, because our whole goal is to provide content that is of value to you, that is of value in the bariatric community. And just because you have not had weight loss surgery doesn't mean that you are not a member of the surgery. You found us for a reason, and we want to be a resource for you start to finish. So no matter where you are along the journey, we want to make sure that, we're supporting you and providing things of value to you. So just thank you for being a part of the community and supporting us. So with that, we'll wrap up our very second episode. Wendy, again, thank you so much for being with us. Jason, always a pleasure talking with you. And we're just excited to continue to work and grow this community to make it just something that we all find valuable. So thank Absolutely. You for your support. All right, you guys, we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.